Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Revolution Radio. This is Dr. Kate. I'm happy to be joined by a few people in the chat room this evening. Good evening, U.S. Marine Corps vets. I'd like to welcome everyone here, especially those who will be listening later on the podcast. And I'd like to bid a special welcome to any of our soldiers out there who are fighting for our freedom and liberty, to all previous serving military. I thank you so much for your service. We are grateful. And we have an opportunity right now to do our part, as you have done your part very aptly for our country. So let me begin by, again, mentioning that John F. Kennedy, in his inaugural address, said that those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And we are at a point right now where that particular point is being tested and also being reached. I ask you just to hang on one second here. I have to take care of my dog. I will be right back, And I'm just going to put a little music in here just while I'm doing that. Be right back. Back again. Thank you. Pardon me. I've told my dogs to stay in and be quiet, but we'll see how long that happens. In any case, we are revolving back to a place of constitutional governance. I believe that is in the cards. That is what we are about. And I think in this revolution, it's quite interesting to see what has emerged. I believe that I think the trigger for the awareness of Americans was the growing disillusionment with not only Democrats, but also the installation of a usurper into the White House. This has just shocked the senses and still continues to shock the senses for me personally. So as you see, what has emerged in this revolution, which has the greatest potential to be the most peaceful revolution ever, like the Orange Revolution and other places that have been achieved peacefully. The Tea Party Patriots, and they are representing, in my view, a new revolution, a new movement that is quite apart from Republicans and Democrats and focuses entirely on the Constitution. And it represents a return to constitutional governance. I don't know how many of you were at the 9/12 march, but one of the things that I will always remember is the signage of those 2.1 million people that were there. It was not stupid, ridiculous, immature signs. It was all about returning to the Constitution, find it in the Constitution. What is there? So it was no surprise to me, Ashley, that what's beginning to emerge is a fierce attempt to influence and infiltrate the Tea Party Patriots, and it's coming from a lot of places. But let me just run down some of the major characteristics of the Tea Party Patriots. And number one is government size. And we're talking about constitutional governance tonight, so we sure as heck better be able to talk about it, because let me tell you, the attack is coming from a lot of places. I read a very disturbing article today about how the Clinton machine is now going to start going after the Tea Party Patriots. We not only have them, but we have our own internal false patriots that are trying to usurp the movement. We have the Republicans that are trying to take over the movement. And we have learned through all of this, and thank goodness we're aware, that none of those entities are going to solve the problem here. And in fact, the harder the effort gets, the more you know we're having an impact. But Tea Party Patriots, government size and spending is one major issue. Personal responsibility is another. We are not a welfare, we are a welfare state now, but that was not what was in mind. And just about every action of government is designed to take your own personal responsibility away from you and hand it over to the government. Along with personal responsibility, of course, is personal sovereignty, national sovereignty, state sovereignty. These are fundamental components of our individual rights and our being united as individuals and individual states. State authorities and state power. It is very easy to see the U.S. Constitution and the first 10 amendments as essentially a perfect mechanism. The Constitution prescribes and limits the powers of government, and rightly so. That's what we wanted. The 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, is our enforcement mechanism for the Constitution. It's our enforcement mechanism to ensure that the government does not violate the Constitution. And, you know, I want to immediately take hold of the word revolution and take hold of the word who is revolting and who is a renegade. Because if you look at this, it is not we, the people, who are revolting. It's the current government, those 535 people and so forth, who are revolting against the Constitution. They are out of compliance. They should be seen as basically enemies of the Constitution. They are not upholding it. And we are so far from constitutional governance right now that they are hoping that we forget what this is, and that we will give up under the onslaught. Now, in my blog, Dr. Kate's View, and if I ever stop talking, I'll put up a couple of links and stuff for you. I've been really looking at stories that try to uncover why and how the Constitution and when the Constitution was undone. And I've started really, the place of starting is really with the progressive movement. Whether it came out of the Republican or Democratic Party, it really doesn't matter, because it had sort of a life and philosophy of its own. But the progressive viewpoint, rooted in Marxism, rooted in Darwin, and a number of other philosophers, essentially, is communist in nature. It's supposedly egalitarian. But in order to achieve egalitarian, totalitarianism is essential. It's a part of this viewpoint of progressivism. And it's really ironic because you don't think of, quote, progressive as being essentially totalitarian. But it is. And so I've traced the roots of this through my and essentially the progressive movement is an attack on the Constitution and its founding principles. The first president to actually openly speak disparagingly of the Constitution was Woodrow Wilson. And in fact, that was the first fascist government, was the Wilson administration in the Western United States. So essentially, the progressives turned into the liberals during FDR's time, then turned into the Democrats a little bit later after that. But essentially, the Democrats, not the Blue Dogs, the old Democrats, probably to the original principles of the Democratic Party, are probably long gone. I don't see anybody out there really who could be that. But if you look at the roots of the Democrats, it's really going back to their roots, which is communism, socialism, quote, progressivism. But again, the ideals are there, but the mechanism of getting there has to be military. It has to be militarization. So just a few days ago, I found a pretty disturbing video about how the United States right now is living in a fascist society. Then I happened to cross another article on basically the nature of the police state and whether we are living in a police state right now. And I have a couple of articles which I'd like to read. But to relate this back again to constitutional governance, the reason these things are horrific and very scary right now is that they mark, in my view, sort of the final assault on the Constitution. And if they can get away with it, you know, we will have a very hard time getting our liberty back. So it's interesting to me that right now we are in That's right. The usurper is not a natural born citizen. Thanks. And in the chat room, I welcome all guests, anyone listening, U.S. Marine Corvette. Oh, and there's this person, Dr. Kate, there who can't get a word in edgewise, I guess. And no callers on the line this evening. So let me go to a piece I just wrote on something I want you to be alert as to. Now, I had been focusing. I told you about progressives and so forth, and I'm getting to a place right now because I'm going to go to an immediate article that I read today, and then it'll see you. It'll show you what I've got. Here's the title of the article. Now, just as background, as like I said, the progressives are the exact opposite to the Tea Party patriots. I'm not even talking about Republicans and Democrats right now. Democrats are equated with progressives in my view. Yeah, there may be a few who are blue dogs and they're holding the line, but by and large, I don't really see any patriots, any constitutionalists out there, except perhaps the Tea Party people. Yes, Ron Paul to a certain extent, the libertarians to a certain extent. I don't want to go into that classification, but I'm talking about looking at the Constitution. And it is very interesting to me that, again, the Tea Party is representing the emergence, finally, the awakening of the American giant, the patriotism of the people. There's no mistaking it. You won't see stupid signage at a Tea Party rally. You will see issues on the Constitution. And everybody's trying to grab onto it because it's resonating so much with the American people. Your average people out there know that something is wrong, and it's about the Constitution, and we miss it. We miss the Constitution. So, in this Tea Party Patriot movement, and as I told you, looking at progressives and the emergence of the Liberty Movement, which has been around for a long time, but it's been co-opted. I had been focusing on false patriots, which I will talk about in a second, but the people among us who claim to be patriots, but they really aren't, and that it is for the rebirth of liberty in this country that these people be called out, said who they are, and that their strategies be identified because they are all about dispersing and or controlling all the energy we are generating with this renewed patriotism, with this thing that has finally come out in the gut of all Americans who are truly Americans here. And there are a lot of writers who talk about how the Russians and everyone else are telling us to don't go this way. I mean, when you have other people feeling sorry for us, you know there's something wrong. But so I was looking for false patriots, and I knew there would be a general attack from the Democrats, thinking that it's, you know, the Obots. But alas, it's actually much deeper than that, because the Tea Party patriots represent the emerging constitutional governance. And again, we're going to talk about that in a second. But let me capture you with this article. This is by in Big Government, and it's called Clinton Plotting Tea Party Counterattack. Last week, former President Clinton was rushed to the hospital in New York for an emergency heart operation. Medical experts said the procedure was relatively routine and predicted Clinton would make a full recovery and be back to his regular schedule soon. To the public, at least, that schedule revolves chiefly around the earthquake relief efforts in Haiti. In fact, some Clinton associates cited the work in Haiti as exacerbating his heart condition. Clinton money man Terry McAuliffe even noted that Clinton's Haiti work continued right up to the operation. Democrat colleague Terry McAuliffe said Mr. Clinton had participated in a conference call on earthquake relief efforts as he was wheeled into the operating theater. Well, we'll take Terry's word on that. But Big Government has learned of at least one other conference call around this time. a meeting of former Clintonistas and senior Democratic political operatives to coordinate a pushback to the burgeoning Tea Party movement. Consider it a Democratic Party relief effort. When the Tea Party, 9/12, and town hall protests and rallies first erupted on the national scene, they were derided by national politicals as astroturf or a small fringe movement. Lefty journalists at MSNBC, CNN, and elsewhere laughed away at the movement with derogatory pornographic references. Then Scott Brown won the election to the U.S. Senate from Massachusetts. No one is laughing anymore. In fact, Democrats are facing political annihilation this November. Not only do Democrats face the possibility of losing their congressional majorities, massive losses in state house races could jeopardize redistricting next year, and set back the progressive agenda for at least a decade. So, the Clinton Empire is planning to strike back. Check that out. Underline. Set back the progressive agenda for at least a decade. Now, we all know we may have loved Clinton. We may have loved all these various other people, but they're progressives. And the RINOs, there are progressive Republicans who feel the same way. Progressive being basically defined by government is going to solve everything. Huge government interference. That's the way. That's why progressives don't really enable personal responsibility. Because Big Brother, because the government will take care of this. Big government has learned that Clintonistas are plotting a, quote, push-pull strategy. They plan to identify 7 to 8 national figures active in the Tea Party movement and engage in deep opposition research on them. If possible, they will identify 1 or 2 they can perhaps, quote, turn, either with money or threats, to create a mole in the movement. The others will be subjected to the full-on smear campaign. Big government has also learned that James Carville will head up that effort. Obviously, there is no love lost between Obama and the Clinton machine. It may at first seem odd that Clinton would rush to Obama's defense, but the Tea Party movement poses a threat far beyond the immediate goals of the Obama administration. The Tea Party movement could evolve into a new realignment, one founded on a belief in limited government and less government interference in the economy. The progressive agenda, which has been painstakingly built up over the last 3 decades, could be left in tatters. As the Clintons know, politics ain't beanbag. Expect the counterattack soon. Don't say you haven't been warned. I think this is kind of a serious issue, because what they're doing is, you know, this well-honed research, opposition research, you know, has killed people, I guess literally and figuratively, their careers and so forth. And this indicates how serious it is. On the one hand, I think that I'm, you know, okay. Then we are worthy opponents. On the other hand, I'm infuriated because this is our Constitution. This is our country. They are our government. They work for us. And in that regard, I do not appreciate this. And now I want to throw you to another piece that I read and put on my blog this week, and that is the National Security Advisor. Hang on 1 second here. Looks like the National Security Advisor has told Congress, and Congress said nothing. Dennis Blair, Obama's National Security Advisor, told Congress that, quote, the executive branch has assumed the right to murder Americans who it deems a threat. So who's the threat? This is extremely disturbing. And I'm going to just take a peek in the chat room. Good evening, Tenacity guest, U.S. Marine Corps vet. Welcome. So we're talking about really a huge attack that's going to be led by Carville. Now, I was watching part of the Tea Party convention, and I did see James Carville walking around, and I thought that was very strange. Now I understand what this is about. It's essentially this resurgence of Americans represents the return to constitutional governance. This is what it's about. And this is why the attack is going to be severe, both from the inside as well as from the outside, not only the typical characters, but now the Clinton machine. Now, isn't that interesting? Because it's taking advantage, of course, of Hillary Clinton supporters, PUMAs, who are, wherever people are right now, independents and so forth and so on. Some people are okay with Obama, others are not. But it's getting serious. Now, we also note that Arianna Huffington this week also said it was okay to, it's time for the left to start getting violent with the right. Excuse me, one second. And Amy Bishop, the professor who murdered three other people over probably a tenure issue, was a devout Obama supporter. Notice again all the Muslim attacks that have happened in our country as well. So I'm not saying there's, this has all been coordinated and so forth, but there is absolutely the egging on of left violence against patriots because it is the big dream of progressives to finally put the nail in the Constitution's coffin right now. And their agenda is seriously on the line. If they can't stop the agenda and, the elections in November, what do you think is going to happen? I think it's going to be pretty serious. So let's talk just a little second, a bit about, again, about co-opting language and so forth, and how this is going to be used against us. And let me chat back in there. Let me see. Yeah, I just where is Congress? This is the U.S. as a police state. Very, very interesting. And again, this is the progressive dream. Again, progressives cannot get to the egalitarian view without totalitarianism. You have to go through militarization of society to get to the place where you forcibly implement, quote, egalitarianism. And in doing so, you remove every individual incentive that you possibly can. I've worked in Indian country for 30 years, and I can't help but think that what Obama is doing to America is turning it into an Indian reservation. And, you might want to think about that because there, of course, the United States has plenty of models to follow this with. The police state issue is a part and is essential to state control. This article that I'm looking at, the U.S. as police state, which I will post in the chat room in just a second, talks about the implanting of chips in every person. Of course, the traffic lights. Last week we were talking about the fusion centers with Ryan McCain and Jeff Lewis. And those fusion centers are big, huge data collection centers. And there's also rather, and perhaps one of our listeners might want to call in, but there's a huge data mining effort going on all of our efforts on Twitter, all of our communications, and so forth. So this attack is significant, and it's attack on the Constitution as well. Does anyone want to call in for a second? Probably not, but let me move on here to a couple of other things I wanted to read to you today. Okay, I want to find the False Patriot piece and have you take a look at that because, again, moving to constitutional governance is important to identify these people. What I want to point out on the False Patriots piece for all of you is that there is going to be a significant effort to co-opt the language, as we've been talking about. And I wanted to give you a few examples of what we've experienced now and why we must take hold of revolution, we must take hold of constitutional governance and so forth. So let's talk about just a second some of the taking over of the language that we've experienced this year. For example, the use of the word coup was used to describe a lawful action by the Constitutional Republic of Honduras. A coup implies unlawful military occupation, death, destruction, and so forth. This coup was lawful. Yes, it was by the military, but ultimately it was a lawful coup. Well, it wasn't a coup. This was a removal of a usurper from the office, so it wasn't a coup. Universal health care. Notice how they attack people on the term universal health care. Who could be against health care reform or everyone having access to universal health care? But in fact, what it is socialist takeover of the United States economy. I believe health care was one of the last things Hitler took over before he really took over. And remember, Hitler was enabled by the German population. They weren't stupid. So, you know, they were willing to drink the Kool-Aid and go along here. And this is what we're facing in our country right now, is sort of mindless progressives who don't even know what they're talking about. Some of the youngsters who really like socialism don't even know what they're talking about here. You wear Che Guevara on your chest, on your T-shirt, not knowing how many millions of people he wiped out, or Mao, or the others. So, and then this is my favorite. So universal health care is really socialist takeover of the American economy. And treason against the environment is used to describe anyone who opposes cap and trade legislation. Treason against the environment. Let's hear all three of those words: coup, universal health care, treason. Those are heavy words to throw around at people and to use. Now, if you are for constitutional governance, and this is what the object of this show is, if I can keep blabbing long enough, or unless someone wants to call in and save me, or if I can put on a little music. And in fact, I might play Jeff Williams' podcast this evening. but it is important that we absolutely take back the language. Coup, if you are for constitutional governance, you deny absolutely that it was a coup in Honduras. It was a lawful removal of a person who had violated constitutional and Supreme Court orders. That was a lawful removal, a lawful action. Universal health care. If you are a constitutionalist, number one, you have to ask the question, what's the government doing in health care? What's the government doing there? And then you have to talk about what constitutional governance would look like if you were reforming healthcare in the United States of America. What would that be? That would be effectively using the Commerce Clause to allow people to buy insurance across health line, across state lines. That would be effective kinds of price controls and so forth and so on. There would be tort reform. These are pieces, and you wouldn't start with the whole thing, because it's too easy to call you stupid if you object to universal health care. You don't start with the big plate. You start with small pieces. That's why this upcoming seminar on the 25th is with Obama is not only unconstitutional, but it's ridiculous. It's unconstitutional because the president has nothing to do with legislation. He should not be sitting there proposing, you know, solutions. And it's a setup because it makes the Republicans look like the party of no or the party of nothing. But it's completely out of line. And we're supposed to expect this? No, we were supposed to expect we're supposed to believe that he was going to televise the House debates and the Senate debates. No, he's televising his own, rubbing stuff in everybody's face here. They're going to continue the way they are. So it's important that when you take universal health care and you break that down in a constitutional sense, it means a whole bunch of other pieces that would in fact be constitutional. And the other piece that you have to ask on universal health care, and you have to know, and we'll be discussing this next week, is basically nullification of federal law at the state border. This is entirely possible, I'm beginning to think, on a wide range of issues: energy, health care, taxation, of all kinds of things, environmental regulations, so forth and so on. Certainly, there are plenty of areas where there is absolutely too much government intrusion, even state government intrusion, and it is only we, the people, who are going to be aware of that. If you are a constitutionalist, you can see some practical things will come to mind for you on whatever level you are. If you are not, or if you are a false patriot, then you will fight tooth and nail to discredit people in every way that you can and make false issues. Because remember, it's very difficult to argue with constitutionalists on ideas, on the fundamental basis. When you look behind progressivism and liberalism and Democratism and Obamaism, it's really empty and it's ruthless. It's ruthless. Just take a look at progressive history. This was the biggest shock to me, was to have the wool ripped off my eyes to see who, in fact, these people really were. And they scare me to death. So we have to take this back. Now, treason, what is treason? It consists only of two things: aiding or abetting or giving company, or making war on the states. There isn't a quote-unquote treason against the environment if you oppose cap-and-trade legislation. Do you see how stupid that is? What a hijack of the language. Treason is two things. Now, if you ask me, the people who are committing treason are those in the government right now who are, in fact, rebelling against the Constitution. And in doing so, they are making war on the states. Economic war, environmental regulation war, police state war, absolute interference with commerce, not regulation of commerce, absolute usurpation of they're taking all our power. They will give rights, Miranda rights, and First Amendment rights to terrorists, but they won't to Americans. This is really, it's Cloward Piven. It's in your face. It's all the time. It's every day you wake up. This stuff is there all the time. And it's outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous. So when someone says, hey, you're being treasonous against the environment, you're a denier of this stuff. No, you have to come back and not only define what treason is, but turn it back on them. Do you think that proposing that, Americans pay for everything, and everybody's everything, who do you think that's affecting? Who is that making war on? I believe, like I say, there's treason going on all over the place right now, but none of these people up there are going to see this. Now, let me check in here for a second. Somebody's talking Jeopardy. Wait a minute. Hang on. Oh, we have a caller. Very nice. And And let me see. Tenacity, would you like to be on the line as well? Okay. Very good. There you are, 678.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, just fine. This is Phil, USMC Vet.
Hi. Good evening.
How are you? Yeah, you said you needed somebody to call in, so I thought I'd give it a go and participate. I don't know what I have to add to your conversation that you've already had, but excuse me. But I guess the point that sticks out in me is the way, and let's just call them the left, just because that's the guys, the Looney Tunes that are way out there. But let me clarify that I don't buy into the left-right paradigm. It's not the left versus the right or the blue versus the red. It's the state versus the individual, and I'm sure we can agree on that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The left is very good at corrupting the language, and they do that up front. It's like that's the first move on the chessboard is to redefine the terms, and they do it across all the different aspects of this war. And I hate to use these war metaphors and analogies, but just think of it like a chessboard. Each piece represents a particular issue, and each one has its own move and power and place in the game. And that's what it is. To them, this is a game. And if you think back to when Al Gore was in office back then, it was popular to talk about the living constitution, and that's what they were trying to do, I think. They were setting the groundwork to persuade the American people to think along a certain line, to affect thought processes. And so once people begin to hear this often enough, it starts to work its way into their psyche, into their thought processes. And without critical thinking, it's easy to be duped into thinking, well, sure, well, how could the Founding Fathers have known anything about abortion or homosexuality or this housing crisis, you know, they couldn't have known. And the intention is to, I think, detract from the very principles themselves. Principles that stand on their own, and the simplicity of the Constitution is just remarkable. But they're really good about trying to change the meaning of words, and like you pointed out earlier, you know, they use these emotionally charged words like coup and treason, and they always direct it towards people who are in opposition to some part of their chess game, and this is such a broad range of attack. Even the Agenda 21, this sustainable development thing, is an attack on representative government, and the whole thing is an attack on the sovereignty of the individual. They're trying to influence people to think of themselves as part of the collective. And even in the universities, they're starting to offer courses in, you know, global citizenship and so forth. So what we, I guess the challenge for us as patriots is that we've got to know what we believe in. We've got to know our arguments and our facts, because leftists, they don't use facts. They use emotion. They can't argue facts. And as we all have experienced, I'm sure, when you present them with facts, they respond with hyperbole and ad hominem attacks. But what we've got to do, in my opinion, our best approach right now is to put in place 10th Amendment legislators and 10th Amendment governors. And here in Georgia, we're fortunate. In fact, I went to a little get-together this evening at the Cobb County Republican ladies had put together with various candidates had come together for state office and whatnot. Ray McBerry was there. Now, Ray McBerry is not a politician. He's an independent businessman. But we've got to think, when you hear people say, we've got to kick all these guys out and replace them, well, who are you going to replace them with, another politician? No, what you need to do is we need to replace them with a patriot. And we've got that in Georgia with Ray McBerry, and Texas has it with Deborah Medina, and I think that's what we've got to do. We've got to reclaim our states and assert our sovereignty and employ the principles of 98, nullification and interposition.
Thank you very much. We've got Tenacity on the line, and thought we could all have a conversation here. Welcome.
Hello there. Good evening.
Hey, Q-Ball.
Q-Ball. Oh, I think I'm missing something here.
I put in, he said he was in Q, and I said my head looks like a Q-Ball. Is that
very good. Well, you know, that's what I started to really try to talk about tonight was constitutional governance, and Phil, you've hit on it right there on needing to know our terms and also how much at the local state level is important. Terry, what can you tell us about additional tools you would offer as well? How we move through this, because we are in the fight for America, in my view.
Well, Dr. Kate, we've got to back out of this ambush the same way we came into it. And I was just listening to a friend of mine sent me a video interview of Norman Dodd. Have you ever heard of Norman Dodd?
No.
Well, turns out I sincerely believe he's a relative of mine. Of course, my name's Terry Dodd. And my folks came from out of the Virginia area, and this Norman Dodd was right up there in that New Jersey area, not far from where, you know, I know certain ancestors of mine are from. And he was being interviewed by G. Edward Griffin. And apparently this Norman Dodd was a banker, and he got to a position where he was asked, you know, how to solve some of the banking problems back in the late 1920s. And he told them, basically, after going through some research, that they needed to return to sound banking. And, of course, that got him into trouble. And eventually he told them that, you know, if they weren't going to do this, that he couldn't continue in the banking business unless they returned to sound banking. And not only did they boot him out, they blackballed him so he could never get a job in another bank anywhere in the United States. So then he goes off and he gets into the stock market and investment and financial management stuff. And eventually he gets called in and becomes a congressional investigator. And what he was investigating was the tax-exempt foundations, you know, like Ford and Carnegie and Rockefeller and all of these big tax-exempt foundations. And he was asked to investigate them. So he goes in, and what he comes back with is he finds out that they had all gotten together and determined that what they needed to do was to basically take over the education system. Now, this is back, we're talking, you know, in the 1930 era, right? And he ends up getting in all kinds of political problems over this because he's sitting there revealing these secrets of all of these international banksters. Well, the subversion of our country has been going on since, you know, all the way back, you know, really from the beginning of the time of our country, the time of our founding fathers. There's been the subversion that's been going on ever since. But we have been ambushed. We've been ambushed in our education system, obviously in our courts. They've taken over our entire government system. Vet was talking about needing to get patriots in there. I like to refer to them as statesmen, because these are people who love the Constitution, who will stand up for individual rights, who believe that the government is there to serve us, that they do not have the right to unlimited taxation of us. And a statesman does not buy into the lies. So we've got to back out of the same way that we've been ambushed. We've got to back out of this, and we've got to retake our schools. We got to get the government out of our lives. We got to get them out through the IRS. We got to get the Federal Reserve gone. We've got to do tremendous cutting of spending from in Washington D.C. It's the only way that this is going to ever come full circle. Now, what does that mean for us, though? it means that we're all going to have to join together and bear the burden. I hate to say that because I just heard Glenn Beck say it, and I certainly don't want to be going there because I don't trust any of these guys. You look at Glenn Beck and you say, wow, he said some great things, but he still works for Rupert Murdoch and the Saudi prince and Roger Ailes. And there's still a controlled resistance going on there, even with Glenn Beck. So, you know, our media is another place that we need to take it back. We need to start, getting some of these international globalists out of our media. We've got to find a way to get some wealth because these guys have stolen all of our wealth. I mean, that's a part of their plan is to literally destroy the middle class, and they are doing a first-class job of it.
Yes, they are.
And people keep thinking that they're being dumb or they're being stupid, that they don't know what they're doing. Well, I hate to tell you this, folks. They know exactly what they're doing. And it's hurting us, not because they're making mistakes, but because they want to hurt us. So we've got to work backwards. We've got to stand up. We've got to grow some gonads and be responsible. And that's what we've abdicated all of this. We can't point the finger at Washington or the courts or anybody else because we're the ones that are responsible for this. We're the ones that have allowed them to take our grand jury system. We're the ones that have allowed them to tell us that we can't judge the law as a petit juror. We're the ones that have sat in the pews in the churches and allowed the ministers to tell us that the government is a higher power. We've got to stand up. We've got to put a stop to this stuff. And every time somebody opens their mouth and tries to feed us a lie, we've got to say that's a lie. No, I'm not accepting that. I'm not going to buy that. Because if we don't believe it, if we don't believe the lies of the tyrants, then their lies will have no effect. So what I'm saying is that we're responsible. And if we don't, it's worse to believe the lie of a tyrant than it is to be a tyrant, I believe, because without believers of those lies, the tyrants have nobody to speak to. So that's what we've got to do. We've got to take responsibility. That's the only way, and we got to back out of this the same way we came into the ambush, because we're still getting ambushed.
You know, a couple of things I wanted to point out. You know, first of all, versus no, which is very important. Politicians tell lies and people believe the lies. And yes, people who are believing those lies are the ones who convict people in tax cases in the juries where they have no right to do that. So the other thing that we notice, I'm so sick of that word believe, change you can believe in, that slogan. Isn't that interesting? Because it's about believing in something and not knowing anything. Now, backing out, that's a big deal because we're going to have to do that. And it relates to Phil's discussion here because at the local level, I was at a workshop last week, and the first place people started was the schools. And Terry, you'll be really happy about the idea that spontaneously came up from people there was taking them out of school, taking their kids out of school, all of them, one day a week for constitutional education and seeing what that impact would be.
Let's talk about that for a second. Let's focus on that for a second. What will the impact be? First of all, it impacts the daily average attendance, which changes the amount of money that any particular school gets. So if you want to have influence, hit them in the pocketbook. And pulling your kids out of the school for whether it's a day a month or a day a week, whichever it is, it is going to impact the budget of the school system. And if they get wind, if it's done in organized fashion where a lot of people do it at one time, then they're going to be very aware that that's happening, and it'll serve as a strike. Now, What else does it do? It allows people to actually spend time with their kids in an educational environment. And if you're studying constitutional studies and teaching them about the Constitution and their unalienable rights and what it means to be a sovereign citizen, not only is that going to be good for those kids, that's going to be tremendous for the parents. Now, the other thing that I would suggest they do is that they network with the other parents that are doing this so that they get to know those parents who are civic, doing that civic action, so that they can actually form a coalition of people who are doing civic action, and then they can do field trips and go down to the state house and teach their kids about true civics. So you accomplish three things: you hit the schools in the pocketbook, you build a better relationship with your children, and you build a network of like-minded parents. Now, that's powerful.
What do you think, Phil? Pop in there.
I agree that it's up to us to go forward. I don't agree that where we are now is our responsibility. As you correctly pointed out, this has been going on since Hamilton and Jefferson and Madison and Adams, all those guys were knocking heads. You know, the war for control of the globe has been going on even before the United States was formed. So that's no big mystery. And personally, I think we should have stayed with the Articles of Confederation, but here we are. But yeah, a minor point. Disagree that we are where we are today, and it's our fault. No, but what we can do, we can affect things from this point forward. And I think it's a good idea. Homeschooling is a threat to the machine. Pulling kids out of public schools is a good idea. Networking is an excellent idea. But as far as taking over the media, we don't want to take over that corrupt system. We want to have our own separate system. And that's what the Internet has done. The Internet has allowed patriots to get unbiased information. You know, if you told me 2 years ago that, Phil, you're going to get most of your news from Al Jazeera, English, and Russia Today, I would have said you're crazy. But that's exactly what happens. Every RT YouTube I've seen is a superb interview of substance, whether it talks about this false pandemic or the Russian professor that predicted that the United States is going to break up or whatever. But we know the U.S. news media is controlled by the corporations, and that we're basically operating in a corporatocracy, and it's all essentially mercantilism, which was one of the reasons we declared our independence from jolly old England. But in my opinion, from where we go from here, is at the state level. We need to elect state house people and governors and officers of the state who will stand on the Constitution and exercise the right of nullification and interposition. And from there, we go forward with challenging the 17th Amendment, which in my opinion is unconstitutional in its face because it denies Article 5, where each state is guaranteed the right of suffrage. And that was like the fourth leg of the stool. We've got executive, legislative, and judicial three legs of the stool, but we actually had a fourth leg, and if you want to think of it, is the state legislators were appointing the senators, and that way the senators were beholden to each sovereign republic and not this quasi-democracy of being directly elected by the public, and I think we need to face reality, and the reality is the 14th, 16th, and 17th Amendments were never legally ratified. Philander Knox just said, "Hey, they passed," and the fact of the matter is none of them did. But we continue to allow ourselves to be governed by this de facto government that has no right to exist. Congress adjourned in 1861 and never actually reconvened according to parliamentary rules, so we made a transition from a de jure government to a de facto government, and the United States now is a corporation. We no longer have common law, and sovereignty is out the window. The only sovereignty we have is the sovereignty we stand up for. And it has to start, I agree, we have to do it, it has to start with us, but it has to start at the state level. Washington, D.C. is a lost cause, in my opinion. The best we can hope for is, I don't know if you've read Moulin LaBey by, was that by Boston Tea Party? I can't remember. But, of course, you know, Moulin LaBey means, you know, come and take them, right? That's what Xerxes was told at the Battle of Thermopylae. But in the book, it talks about a scenario where, much like the Free State Project, only instead of New Hampshire or Vermont, which the demographics aren't really conducive, it was Wyoming. And people would go up and they would move in, settle, and they would begin taking the state over basically at the precinct level. And you get your precinct captains in, you elect your school board, your city commissioners, your mayor, then your state house, your reps, and then as you accomplish getting your people in position, then you have, you know, over 50% in the state house, now you can push your agenda forward. And I think that's what we've got to do. We've got to do it on the local level. We've got to engage in politics. And this really is a gut wrencher for me because I detest interfacing with anybody in the GOP. It's just, I almost get physically ill. But I went to a Ray McBerry thing tonight, and a gal comes up to me. She says, "Who's your county GOP chairman?" And I didn't know. I should have known. I should know that. And so she said, "Well, I need you to find that out and give me his personal information, because what we're going to try and do is make sure that McBerry is being promoted properly by the Georgia GOP, and they're just a bunch of knee-jerk neocon, you know the type." So I'm going to have to bite the bullet and engage my county GOP as much as I cannot stand being around those people, but I've got to keep my eye on the goal, and the goal is the restoration of the republic is the bottom line. We all do what we can and what we're motivated to do, and that's why I think Blog Talk Radio. I don't watch TV anymore at all. I never watch television. After in the evening, after work, fix dinner, I turn on BTR, and that's my way of getting rejuvenated by listening to patriots like you guys, and that's what we got to do. We just got to get active, get motivated, get engaged, and keep our eye on the prize.
Well, thank you, and couldn't agree more. I mean, there's so much to do, and I'm intrigued by the idea of like getting out, backing out of this, and that you or need to sort of walk back the Constitution or walk back the violations. So I wanted to ask a couple things on this. One, with regard to the schools, I like the impacts, and also in talking with parents in Idaho last week, they are very concerned that there's no constitutional education, civic education in their schools. So I think this taking them out and doing the field trips and networking, there is a serious effort, I think, that could spread all over Idaho to do this. Is also a way to let schools know that they've got to get the curriculum back in their civic education. I think also, Phil, what you're talking about too, I think, is getting control of the parties right now at the precinct level. And I believe, is it Edward Griffin that is doing the Freedom Force International, and that is the precinct captain strategy?
Yes, actually, I have a friend, Martha Mellon, who started Ron Paul Meetup Group number 8 right here in Alpharetta, 8 out of 1,600. She's been to a local Freedom Force meeting. I haven't made one yet, but she was quite impressed, and I intend to get active in that. But while we're talking, let me just interject one other thing. I walked into my office because I've got stuff tacked up all over the walls. You were talking about increasing education of the Constitution in the school systems. Let's step back from that and kind of look at that in a detached way and say, yes, that's a good thing. Why hasn't it been done? Well, back in 2003, I'm looking at a printout of October 23rd, 2003. I'm looking at an article that says, "We the People, state coordinators and promoters for the state of Georgia. Then there's this list of people. It's a political action committee, Education for a Free Nation. You may remember that when Bush was in office back in 2003, there was talk about increasing the study of the Constitution in the public school systems. Well, that had been co-opted. That was not a true constitutional educational effort. You know, it was co-opted by the global elitists. They were going to teach their version of the Constitution, you see. So, you know, this goes back to 2003, so we have to be just really aware that these guys are out there and they're serious. But anyway, I digress.
No, that's exactly right. And that's an important piece, because part of the education is going back and having people, for example, look at that interview that you were just looking at, Terry, and talking about, and really laying this out very clearly. You know, I was going to remark that in Wyoming, when I began looking around to see what the state is doing on constitutional education, I found this, you know, very well-funded Constitutional Education Center for Wyoming. So I took a look at it, and the whole thing, our country is described as a democracy. And
there
they're teaching principles of democracy. Called them up, and I said, hey, you know, I said, what do you mean the country is a constitutional republic?
Talk about co-opted, huh?
Absolutely. So this is very serious, and this is, you know, if it's obviously, if it's gone back to the 1920s, 1930s, even before then, education has been absolutely the key. So
Dewey started communizing, if you will, the American education.
Now, the couple of other things I wanted to mention before I launch into or really want to discuss with you and have Terry talk as well. Another immediate area, sort of backing out from where we got started, is the jury education. I had a read on a couple of weeks ago to talk about the Seventh Amendment and the juries and the Fully Informed Jury Association. That's obviously very important for that education. The precinct level, I also think the militias are going to be extremely important. Those of you may know that Wyoming is actually a very good state in that regard, and they're now just passing a constitutional firearms bill that basically would require for concealed weapons at all, and would take the power to judge the sufficiency of other states' permits away from the state's attorney general and so forth. So it's very good. The militias, I'm thinking not only defense but also communication, which leads me to this issue, and Terry raised it, about needing a media. Needing some kind of form of communication. The internet is great, but there's, of course, Big Brother, we also know was there, but what is going on there, and should we start developing, for example, shortwave radio networks or other kinds of systems, maybe even a code so we can communicate? Terry, what do you think?
Well,
I'm sorry to drag you away from your spider game.
No. You didn't drag me away from my spider game. I agree with a lot of what Vet says, and I think if we were to talk a little bit more, that we would see that really we're in agreement. The whole principle about responsibility, it kind of comes down to what we keep putting up with, and the whole subversion process. The reason subversion doesn't work in some countries is because they'll just flat throw the people out. They're not tolerant of it at all. And back in the 1800s, our jurors understood their responsibility to judge the law, and we had a good, effective grand jury system, and we don't have that anymore, and we've got to retake that, and we can actually make a big impact and be responsible and do things to stop the subversion that's been going on if we are simply educating our next generation. We stopped being storytellers. We forgot to pass on our knowledge of these things to the next generation, and we've allowed video games and the television and all of these different things to replace us as being educators, as parents. And so there is a lot of responsibility that we have in allowing this to come about, and our parents are responsible. But we have to be responsible in order to teach the next generation how to avoid these type of traps of allowing of the subversion and all of this change that's not wanted to happen. On the other hand, with regard to the media situation, I totally agree with that on that. And it would be wonderful if we did at least have one mass media opportunity where the truth could truly be told. And I'm not sure that, you know, even if we had a station or a network that we controlled, where statesmen controlled it, that would solve the problem, because there's so much pressure on these people. I mean, if you look at the media blackout that was published through Canada Free Press, for example, you quickly find out that the amount of pressure that is put on those people is very, very incredible. They have high financial pressures. They have they have things like blackmail and even threatening people's lives and their families. I mean, you look at like even Ron Paul, but before him, who was the guy out of Texas? I have a mental block. Help me out.
Perot.
I mean, do you guys know what happened to him?
I'd heard his family was threatened, so he dropped his campaign.
Well, before his family was threatened, a good chunk of his staff was killed.
That I did not know.
Where? How?
In a plane accident. He was warned, and let me tell you, there are people out there, and I'll take the risk of this. People like H.W. Poppy Bush. If you look at all of the people that the Clintons that have been either investigating them or had knowledge of them that have fled the country so that they didn't have to testify, or people
or
were killed in freak accidents. I mean, somebody's mighty good at plane crashes. And the timing of them is just too phenomenal to be anything like luck or chance or random or anything like that. And Perot was warned, and a good chunk of his staff was taken out, and he was told after that incident that was no accident, and then his family was threatened. Well, what do you think they're doing to these people in the media? They're doing the same thing. If they can't buy them, or they can't corrupt them in some way, whether it's through sex or you know, some kind of slanderous situation that they suck them into, they're not above taking them out, or people that they love out. So I mean, we've got that kind of corruption going on in Washington D.C., and we've got to put a stop to that kind of stuff.
Well, that makes it even more frightening to have the National Security Advisor basically tell Congress that, you know, the executive branch feels it can murder people who they feel are a threat.
Right, and the reaction from Congress was the eye-opener. Nothing.
Yeah, crickets.
So that tells you who's in charge. The NSA mm-hmm. basically calls the shots.
So I'm thinking again, well, here's a couple of thoughts. You know, Red has said this on a couple of occasions, that we need a film or a movie or something that's going to lay this out. And, of course, we have plenty of individual YouTubes. You know, when you think about the opportunity to educate youth on what's happened. What a great opportunity, because there's a lot of stuff out there. But there needs to be something, as you said, opportunity for the truth to be told. Public media stations, I have no idea. So it is a little bit unnerving it's totally unnerving to see our opportunities, our money disappearing, opportunities to get this word out disappearing. So again, it goes back to the local level, and it goes back to that particular work. But I also want to ask here about how the militias can serve as a, if you will, unifying communication body, county awareness a constitutional defense force, not only just with the militia and arms, but really in terms of information and so forth.
Let's start, Kate, right with the precincts. And one guy that I know of that's been heading up the precincts operation is a guy named Jim Condit out of, I believe, Cincinnati. And his concept is very closely related to Edwin Vieira's Citizens Homeland Security Associations, which, again, starts at the precinct level. All of it really is kind of very tied to one another. I mean, you really can't separate these things out, because it comes back to taking control of your local community, which requires you get to know your people in your community, and it requires that you get involved and you bring up statesmen as candidates to run for election in those precincts. It comes down to preparedness, which again is a matter of community organizing. I hate to throw that term out there, but that at a true sense, not the kind of corrupt socialist communistic sense that term's been demonized actually by those people. But we do need to organize in our local communities. We need to get the precincts and take control of them. We need to bring up politicians. We need to start training our people. We need to work on the sheriff project, like Sheriff Richard Mack talks about, where you bring in and you let the sheriff know what you're doing and develop a relationship with him. And if he is a federal on the federal payroll, so to speak, you need to get him out of office and make sure that you've got a good sheriff in the office that understands about sovereignty and citizens' rights and that supports the whole Citizens Homeland Security concept. And we also need to get our politicians bringing legislation forth at the state level, just like Vet said, where we start, supporting things like the Firearms Freedom Act and state sovereignty and honest money legislation and all of that sort of thing. And it all really works together. It really is a grassroots campaign, the same people involved in all of those things, taking control of your local community. And that's where it starts.
Yeah, I would add that this coming Saturday I've got a meeting with some local people. There's an organization called Alarm and Muster, and you can find them at alarmandmuster.com. It's a Paul Revere call tree set up that each person would call maybe five people, and those five would each have five people to call. And it's essentially just a way to get the word out, anytime something significant happens, like a pending piece of legislation or some state declares martial law, what have you. Excuse me. So Alarm and Muster serves that one function, and that's running parallel to any sort of militias that might be in place. And as Terry pointed out, Oath Keepers, you got to have a handful of business cards from the Oath Keeper organization and hand them out to all your local sheriffs. Pardon me. Because the sheriff, as Sheriff Mack would point out, is the most powerful elected law enforcement official in the nation. And at least here in Georgia, it's my understanding the sheriff reports to the governor. So if the governor says, well, this federal agent here without any authority is appropriating people's life, liberty, or property, throw them in jail. They will. So I think there's a number of different avenues that we can take But as Terry pointed out, it really boils down to networking. You've got to build a network, because who you know is going to end up to be more important than what you have in your hand.
Very good. All of this is all practical tools for constitutional governance. And notice that it's not the big thing. It does get down to the local level, and it gets down to exercising your own personal sovereignty and moving forward. No one person is going to be there to be able to handle this. We can't give up our leadership, our own internal leadership, to other people right now. So this brought me back. Remember, at the start of the hour, I was talking about this new effort, progressive effort, to get at the Tea Party activists because of the threat that the Tea Party activists represent. And the strategy is to pick out a few individuals. Well, what I'm observing about the whole Tea Party effort is it's very diffuse right now. There's no one person. In fact, each person in a county could be a big leader in this area. And that is why they won't be able essentially to disrupt this effort or to go after us. So I can see James Carville trying to, load on into Driggs, Idaho, and try to round up all the grannies who are waving American flags and so forth. But this is at the same time that this is going to be a broad effort. It's going to be a very subtle effort that will be essential. So I guess what I hear everyone saying is we may not see it return in our lifetime, but we certainly can build the seeds for constitutional governance right now. And I reassert what I said at the beginning of the hour. We have to know what constitutional governance looks like. Next week, I'm going to be talking about and having some guests talking about state nullification. So I hope you can join us, Phil, because this will be a big effort. I also just wanted to let Terry know that Wyoming actually has a bill that may be passed this year that is about constitutional money. It's going to allow gold and silver to be used to pay debts in the state of Wyoming. I'm getting more details on it, but it's looking very good. So I'm very pleased that we've got some people here taking a look at this. So we've got just a few minutes left, and Terry, I know you have a show tomorrow night. Is there anything final you'd like to say or offer to a listening audience?
Well, it should be a good show. We're working on two or three different very interesting guests for tomorrow night, and I've got to talk to Red to find out if he was successful at getting the one person on we really wanted to have on tomorrow night. So I'll leave it there. We start out at 7:00, walls in our minds, right here at Revolution Radio with Dr. Kate, Blog Talk Radio, and we'd love to have people join us and call in. Our phone lines will be open tomorrow night.
What time is that?
So from 7 to 9 Mountain. It's 9 to 11 Eastern, 6 to 8 California Pacific time.
And the same thing, Dr. Kate's Revolution Radio, Walls in Our Mind. So it's a terrific show. And I think it has a lot of listeners. I'm hoping that folks will pick up the podcast of this one. But gentlemen, I'm going to end the show a little bit early this evening, and with a broad wish and hope for all of us. It's all hands on deck right now. This is a pivotal year in our country, and I want everyone to really just be alert, be aware, be strong, protect your families, know your Constitution. Constitution is the solution. And I thank you very much, gentlemen, and everyone. We'll see you next week, and I'll see you tomorrow night.
Okay, thanks, Kate. Great show.
Thank you.
You bet. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.